Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast, episode 49. This is the Power Hour, the Thunderdome, introducing the guest of honor, aka the co-host, aka the man with the plan, Keishi. And I'm joining him today. My name is Yuri.
Hey, Yuri.
All right, let's jump in. Well, first things first, I guess, what are you drinking?
Yeah, today, it's called Worldwide Kitchen Series, I guess. You know this thing that's, that has the salt and lychee flavor?
Yes, the summer drink.
Yeah, I think it's the same series, except this includes like strawberry, cranberries, and raspberries.
Yeah.
And it's a 10% juice.
I think I was looking at that earlier today when I was looking at drinks. Like, yeah. Because I drank it before, I didn't think about buying it, but I should have bought it.
Yeah, it tastes pretty good.
How would you rate it?
I'd say 8 out of 10. How about you? What are you drinking?
I have a Icy Spark. It's a nice bottle with a polar bear on it, lemon flavor. Basically, all it is carbonated water, lemon flavored.
Is it like super, super sparkling? Like kind of.
What's your definition? Sparkling? Oh, yeah, yeah. I've kind of grown accustomed to sparkling water, I guess. Maybe it's the stinging. I don't know what the psychology or the deal behind it is.
Yeah.
Maybe coffee was also kind of similar in that sense because it was bitter. Like, clearly it's not like stinging your tongue or anything.
Yeah.
But there is that bitterness that has a similar kind of, maybe you can't call it sting, but a similar effect. So maybe that's why I've taken a liking to sparkling water.
So you stopped drinking coffee, right?
It's been a while. Yeah. I mean, I had like, I think I told you on Facebook a few days ago, I bought a bottle. I took a sip in the morning and then I just poured the rest out. And prior before that, like maybe 2 weeks back, I had like on a Saturday, I had just one can. And that was it. So like I tried, but like kind of in the back of my head, I'm thinking like, oh, it's been so long. It's gonna be so good to try it again. And then I sip it and just like there, you know, there's no magic there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is this it? So yeah. So I poured it all of it out the other day.
Sounds good to me as a coffee non-drinker.
I would still drink coffee. I think, Not anytime soon, but I think under like situations, like social situations, I also think beer is like a social drink or alcohol. Like beer doesn't taste good, but it tastes good when you're with friends. But otherwise, it's like, I don't know, I'd rather drink something else.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I know we're crossing onto territory that you don't cover. So let's talk about today's topic, episode 49.
All right. So what are we going to learn today?
We're going to learn about learning. So this basically is an idea that both of us had the other day or maybe a week ago where I talked about how I'm doing a Udemy course on learning how to learn. So I'm learning how to learn.
So did you learn how to learn yet?
I think I'm almost done with the course, but like I want to make sure that I don't feel a sense of accomplishment once I finish it, because the whole point is like, you need, these are tools. This is not an accomplishment. These are tools. You know, if you don't use them, if I don't use them, I'm a giant idiot. So that's how, yeah, I like to approach it as like, cause like, yeah, it's nice to finish a course and be like, oh, I learned X, Y, and Z, but it's not. In this particular case, that's not the point. The point is to use this as a tool to learn other things better.
Yeah, that sounds smart, because I feel it's the same with a lot of books, right? It's like you can read them, but unless you actually apply them in practice, then it doesn't give you much at the end of the day.
And do you know why I took on this course?
No, why?
I think I covered it in the past. Like I told you, I was probably the second dumbest kid in first grade back in whatever country that I'm from. Then when we moved to the U.S., shot up to the front of the class. I think it's because school in Ukraine was pretty hard. I guess first grade was comparably harder than American schools. So I shot up to the front of the class, I guess simply because I was operating on a whole other level back in Ukraine. But then I guess I got used to it, or I got lazy. And so the thing is, like, I could read like a textbook the night before and then just do one pass. This was specifically for social studies. I could do just one pass, read through it, and then the next day, like, I could answer any question that the teacher threw at me. But I think that intelligence only applied to that class. Like, math, I was okay at, not the best, but like I understood it enough. But if for some reason it was like with history and social studies that I could just read it once and then it stuck in my head somehow. So maybe I was blessed temporarily. And but the fact that I got lazy and I didn't practice it or no one noticed it, you know, I became an average.
Yeah, I think that's the tough part about like middle school and high school is if you're at least a bit smart, you can kind of get by without really studying, right?
Yeah.
But then the reality hits you, I guess.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's like, that always has been a frustration for me, because I wanted to know how I did it back then. And then like towards the last two semesters of college here, not back in New York, like in New York in college, I was still coasting with like a 3.0 GPA, meaning I'm getting 80s and 85s on tests.
Yeah.
Which is like, well, it's good, but it's like good. It's like, you're not trying hard. It's like passive good. Not like I want to shoot for the stars good. And then towards the, like in the last two semesters here in Japan, I had like 3.9 GPA or 3.8 GPA last two semesters in a row. So I'm not quite sure what it was that made the difference these several times. Like, you know, obviously I think I've been on all spectrums of stupidity and capability. So that's why I was kind of inspired to learn how to learn, because I know for a fact that I probably learned and been learning the wrong way for most of these years.
Yeah, that's interesting. So do you think it might also have been like just different kind of motivation behind? I guess like in my case, for example, in high school, I didn't really bother studying too much because I could just get okay grades without studying. Mm-hmm. Whereas in university, I felt like, well, first of all, it was costing a lot more money than my high school did, which was free, essentially.
Yeah. But did you feel that cost?
I felt the responsibility for that cost.
Okay.
And I guess the other thing is, whereas in high school, you kind of just learn what you got to learn. I think in university, like my major was business and economics, and those are kind of things that I'm interested in, and yeah, that I want, and one that I guess I kind of to an extent understand naturally, but also that I just don't mind reading about and learning about. So I think there were those elements, and then I guess the third part was that whereas high school was in Slovak, I somehow find it easier to learn in English.
Mm.
So I think there were a bunch of different factors beyond just I think. As we go forward, we'll talk about a lot of different learning techniques and how learning works and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering if you think there's any kind of factors like that made the difference between you doing not so well in Ukraine, maybe it's similar to Slovakia, and doing okay in New York, and then doing really good in Tokyo.
It's a good question. I guess from the start as a child, I don't know. I don't think I had the best teachers, because like, I remember my own mom kind of being frustrated with me because she was a physics teacher. And so she had a bit of an ego of a physics teacher. And like my early childhood memories, me sitting at a desk, probably doing math homework or something. My mom sitting by my side trying to help me, but she's not really helping. She's being frustrated and exclaims in Russian, "How can a son of a physics teacher not understand?" That, you know, that caused some trauma. So like, because I definitely felt stupid back then, and I was quite aware of it, maybe that didn't help. Also because there was probably also a big class. I can't really say what it was exactly back then in Ukraine, but I can definitely say that probably because we were learning at a much higher level or faster pace than schools in America, that yeah, when I first moved to New York, I think I had an advantage, which is why I was probably doing very well in elementary school and junior high school.
Yeah.
And then I think in high school, I just became average. So I think motivation and kind of environment and surroundings also help. In high school, I think first day or third day of school, I got hit by a car. So I missed on a whole semester.
That's how all good stories start.
Yeah. I don't know if that was a good story. I missed out on the first semester. And of course, I missed out on the social aspect of it. So it's like you're the new kid coming in mid-year when everyone has already like made best friends and yeah, everyone and everything. And I don't know, like at that point, I was just kind of coasting. I think the getting hit by a car kind of like knocked me sideways as well. It probably gave me some anxiety and fear. Like, you know, you, after an accident, you're more cautious. Yeah. And so you don't want to act out too much, or you just stay in and try to be safe. But again, I'm no psychologist. I don't know the full answer to this. There's probably not an easy answer to this.
Yeah.
And the same kind of thing dragged on into college in New York here. You can consider me being on autopilot. I was just like, let me just, study for a few hours or like 1 or 2 hours. Not exactly like really deep, intense studying, but just like reading through the book and rereading and whatnot. And
yeah,
writing out notes. Not exactly the best stuff. Now get like 80s, occasional 90s, 85s. I think I just aimed for 85s. And like to my parents, that was good enough. So I was like, okay. So that's another thing, you know, like if no one sets a standard for you to meet, then you're gonna just coast by.
Yeah.
Until you finally wisen up to create your own standard, which I think kind of what happened here when I was going to school here. I finally decided to start reading. Like I told you earlier, I started to read about like finance and what I was getting into because I was doing a finance major. Realized that I hated it, realized that I liked startups, realized that, you know, I can learn, I can do things. And I think that kind of like changed my motivation, changed my fire.
Yeah.
Fueled my fire. But I don't know like what exactly, how exactly, why it happened. This is just like a guess, really.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think certainly kind of just deciding that, all right, it's time to get serious, definitely, I guess, played a role in.
Yeah.
In my shift of mindset as well.
But it's like, it's not like you can one day sit down and decide, all right, I'm going to be serious now. I feel like it's not such an easy switch to flip on unless you have some other elements in play.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if like a change of environment also helps learning or just helps kind of shift your mindset, because I guess you came from New York to Tokyo, right? That's kind of when the change happened. For me, it was because I came from Slovakia to Tokyo.
I think going out on your own, you're forced to fend for yourself. Because like, if we're living abroad, we're living alone. We don't exactly have the luxury of, I don't have the luxury of like, you know, being native, fluent in the language. And I guess in both our cases, we don't have like a family or like a strong community here to rely on. So we have to do things by ourselves. So I guess this kind of pushes us into survival mode or overachiever mode, you could say.
Yeah, I think that's true. And again, like I guess back when I was going to Temple, my grandma was still alive and but I think it's also, yeah, like you said, just the unknown kind of. And it's like when I was in high school in Slovakia or whatever, it's like, even if I don't study, at least I can speak the language and I kind of know what's going on, and like if all goes bad, I still speak the language and can get by.
Yeah.
Versus in like at like Temple, it was like, all right, I either study and work hard, or I'm gonna fall behind and quicker just because one, English is not my native language, which is still fine, I guess. But two, also like some of the stuff that I was learning is like, oh, I never heard about this stuff before. I never thought about this stuff in this way before.
Yeah.
So it's like you either try harder or you start falling behind too quickly. And actually when you're in high school, you don't really think about it. It's like, whatever, just get by. You're getting A's and B's without too much effort. So that's great. But I guess once you're in university, then the next step is kind of getting into the real world. So you better get your act together.
I feel like even people like even in college don't kind of get their act together. I don't know if it's like a simple explanation, because I can think of one specific class back in high school. It was Latin class. We had to take Latin, and the teacher there was like militant. Like, you know, before a test, like he would ask us, how long are you gonna study for? And we all had to respond in unison, at least 3 hours, sir.
Sir, yes, sir.
Yeah, so like he ran the class like in a very militant fashion. So like when you raise your hand up, he calls and you have to stand up and deliver your answer. You have to call him sir. So like he expected nothing but excellence. And like we're laughing now, but there was one time, I don't know, I got like a 70 on a test, and he calls me to the desk and he's like, you know, he said like, you're like, you know, I forget exactly what he said. He's like, where are you from? Like, I think like, you know, you should work harder than this. But I guess where are you from? You know, you're an immigrant type of thing.
Yeah.
Probably not the best thing to say, because someone might misread it in the wrong way. It's like, but the nuance that I took away from it was like, you know, because I'm an immigrant, I have to work hard. And he's right about that. And like, I shouldn't be like doing 70 and 80 level work. And for some reason, like he hit a strong chord. And after that, I definitely studied for 3 hours before every test, and I got nothing below a 90.
Nice.
But I think maybe the environment definitely does help.
Yeah, I think so. And again, I guess also just the fact that I assume you kind of came to Tokyo because of out of your own motivation.
Yeah.
And same with me, I came here because I wanted to. It's like nobody forced me, and I was kind of looking for something better than staying in Slovakia and going to university there or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think just the fact that it was out of own initiative.
That's a good point.
Was yeah. helpful, and I guess to tie it into what we're here to talk about today. I wonder if the course that you took said anything about that, because again, I think that part of what a lot of people that criticize the educational system nowadays,
mm-hmm.
talk about is that essentially it's teachers saying, remember this, remember this, remember that, disregarding the kids' interests, essentially, because everybody has the same curriculum and everybody's meant to learn the same facts, essentially.
Yeah.
And everybody's supposed to learn and repeat the same years in history and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, like, I wonder if there's something in our head that just makes us, that just puts a block in front of the learning.
Oh, there is.
Receptor. And it's like, yeah, I don't want to learn about this. It's not something that interests me. So,
yeah. Well, actually, we can jump right in into like how the brain, well, I guess how the brain works with the science of learning. And well, again, let me preface this with a disclaimer. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not an educator. I'm not a teacher. I am taking a course, which is called Learning to Learn, Zero to Mastery. And you can find it on Udemy. So all the stuff that I'm going to talk about today, I'm pulling it from this course.
Yeah. And I guess, I guess our goal here is not to kind of take the listener through the entire course, but I guess it's just to pick some of the parts that interested you the most and kind of see how it applied in our life so far and what we think about it and so on, right? And then I guess we can also link to the entire course in the show notes if somebody's interested in actually taking it and learning everything that was inside the course.
Yeah. All right. So when you said, you know, you're wondering if there's some sort of something in the brain that stops you from learning whenever it's not relevant to you, it automatically made me think of the forgetting curve. So the forgetting curve is it's something devised by, I think it was like a German psychologist back in 1800s named Hermann Ebbinghaus. But long story short, he graphed out how quickly we forget information. So like, I think we talked about on the last podcast, you forget like 50 to 60% of what you learn in an hour.
Yeah.
Like 75% the next day within 24 hours and 90% by the end of the week. So, I mean, you can have these numbers in your head and like in my opinion, I think it's best to veer to the extreme and just say that, let's just say you forget 100% of what you learned the next day. Because it doesn't matter if it's 50 or 60%, you're forgetting quite a lot. So, but the reason why you forget is because if things aren't urgent or relevant to you, if your life is not dependent on it, for example, if your family was kidnapped by, I don't know, the Danish Pastry Association, in Denmark, and they want you to learn 100 Danish words, and then they'll set your family free, you have a very urgent need to learn 100 Danish words. Otherwise, you won't care. Like, you know, if that wasn't the case, you would not have, you have no need for it. You don't want to learn it. You don't care.
Yeah.
So things that aren't relevant to you, it's like, yeah, the brain kind of, I guess, automatically decides what's relevant and what's not. Like if you have a toothache, if you have a backache and you're trying to learn calculus, I guarantee you that the toothache and the backache will kind of will take up more space in your brain, and like as your brain kind of forces you to take action on that.
Yeah.
So point one is, whatever you're learning right now, whatever you learn for the first time, guarantee you're going to forget it the next day, and you're going to forget 50 to 65% of it within the hour. So you forget fast. That's just the nature of things. You forget fast. So having said that, the brain kind of, as you can tell, like the brain then kind of operates on a use it or lose it policy, you know, kind of like a muscle.
Yeah.
If you're working it out, it's going to get bigger and stronger. If you're not learning, it's going to get weaker and weaker and get stupider and stupider, possibly. Maybe that's what happened to me in junior high school and high school.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess kind of the reverse of that is actually what I don't know how your classes were in New York or in Ukraine, but in Slovakia we had to learn a lot of poems for literature.
Oh, I had to learn poems in Ukraine.
Yeah, and I hated that because it's like you learn them. You memorize them.
Yeah.
You repeat them the next day, and then you're done. It's like it's the thing that I hated the most, and I just remember hating it. But some of the shorter ones I could somehow remember.
Yeah.
But it was always in a way where I was learning it, and I could never, like, I would have to sleep on it essentially to be able to recite the poem. So I wonder how that plays into this forget fast, because actually in that case it was like I couldn't even remember it right away after I read it, but then once I read it like 4, 5, 6 times, and then my mom would just say, oh, you should just go and sleep, and when you wake up you will know it.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it's like you wake up and like the poem's magically in your head. Now keep in mind that I could only do this with the short ones. The long ones I could never memorize, and I was like, whatever, who cares? it's useless. But
for here it's like, so you said you did the repetitions, right? You practiced it a few times before you went to sleep.
Yeah, I guess you could say so. Yeah.
So like I guess the next thing to know is like when you learn something new for the first time, that new info, it creates connection between the neurons in your brain. So new info equals new connection, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't repeat it, that connection is going to get weak and then you're going to lose it. If it's weak, that's when you're forgetting it. If the neural connections are weak, you forget. So the repetition is what strengthens the connection. So again, new info is connection. Repetition means strengthen the connection. And in the case of sleeping, like there's two modes of learning. There's focus and diffuse mode. So when you're practicing and you're just focused or you're repeating the poem out loud, you're probably in focus mode and you're just practicing it over and over. And then you also need the diffuse mode, which is when you're sleeping or you're being bored or you're just like playing games or something where you're completely unfocused on it. And that's why people say take breaks.
Yeah.
And also study a little bit every day and like let your brain kind of rest and process the information. Because that's the thing, like your brain still needs to process, I guess, the information in the background. I don't know how, don't quote me on this, but it absolutely needs focus and diffuse mode. So repetition and the strengthening. But by the way, going back to forgetting fast and the whole forgetting curve is if you know that you're going to forget things fast, then it makes sense to come back and review tomorrow and the day after, the day after, and the day after. It also makes sense to not like study for like 3 hours or 4 hours because you're going to overwhelm yourself. It makes more sense to like study for 10 or 20 or 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then come back and do the same 10, 20 or 30 minutes the next day. Just like that's what's going to strengthen the connections. But you have to do that over spaced periods of time. So that's where the psychologist Herman Ebbinghaus, I think he came up with spaced learning again, which is just spacing your learning out instead of like doing it doing it all the night before, like we would do with exams or tests in school.
So would I guess that would mean that cramming before the exam is pretty much useless from the long term point of view.
It's totally useless. I don't remember anything that I've ever crammed for. I think if you want to pass a test and get it over with, maybe I guess it makes sense. But if you want to honestly learn and like use what you learn, I think it's useless.
Yeah, I think so. And I guess you were talking about this focus versus diffuse modes of learning.
Yeah.
And I guess it's kind of similar to just working in general. I guess it's like, sure, you have to write, when you write an article, for example, you have to focus and write. But unless you kind of take breaks before and in between, then your mind doesn't really have time to kind of organize the ideas and think of new ideas and kind of help you bring the product to an end. Because again, you can focus on things, but you also need some off time to think about these things.
Definitely. I think also that's why people say if you're sending out like an email to a client or something that's like with high tension, you should probably let it rest for 24 hours. And even in copywriting, like I think any creative pursuit or expression, like you're told to come back another day and take a look at it. And you always see it in fresh eyes because like it's impossible to see it until your brain has worked in the background. And for the brain to work in the background, you need to give your brain a break.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it's the same as with the poem, actually. It's like when I actively try to learn it, it's like, oh, this doesn't make sense. Why do I have to do this? And then I sleep on it and I guess I wake up, look at it with fresh eyes and go, all right, I guess it makes at least some sense at the end of the day. So let's get done with this.
Yeah. So that's how I guess we learn or we learn better. It's like, we're not going to learn anything on one try, and anything that we learn is requires a lot of practice and repetition.
Yeah.
And if it's not relevant, it's not urgent, we're going to forget it very quickly. Like, remember I told you I read all those books about like trees and fungi earlier or like last year.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't remember much. It's because like, you know, like when I go into work or in my off time, I'm not exactly working on trees or fungi, so it's not exactly relevant to my immediate needs. So,
yeah. I wonder though how because again, I think there's like two types of learning or knowledge, I guess, and I think that's what we talked a couple of times when we talked about how we read books and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think we had slightly different thoughts on that. And because in my eyes, if I read a book that I can apply right away, I think that's great. But I also think it's great if I read a book and there's nothing I can apply right away. You could even say that I forget the book, but then a situation arises that just triggers something in my head and makes me remember that book.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think it was valuable. And again, I think it's the same with your mushroom book. It's like it might feel like you forgot what you read about, yeah. but if there's the right trigger to trigger a certain part of you remembering the book, then I think you can still reap benefits from it years later.
I think it makes sense. I've been classifying my reading as like for entertainment or for action taking, or for inspiration. So yeah. If I'm like, those books were like, I've been reading for exploring and like learning for fun. So I knew like I wasn't going to apply any of that. And I walked in with that understanding from the beginning. But yeah, maybe if later on I have to do something for trees, it'll kick back in. But for now, like, you know, I don't exactly have easy access to it. And I haven't exactly practiced or reread about it.
Yeah.
So having said that, there's something called spaced repetition system. So like, if you do actually want to master something, that's where spaced repetition comes in. Like there's an app called Anki. And for things that aren't immediately urgent or relevant to you, you could still like force practice them by using these flashcards that, you know, they test you on how well you know it. Then if you mark that you know it, it's going to show it to you the next day. If you struggle with it, it's going to keep showing it to you like in that study session.
Yeah.
So like if I do this with Japanese language flashcards, like if I mark one that I don't know, it's going to show it again in 10 minutes. If I mark that I know, it's going to show it again in like a day. But it's going to repeat a few times in that session. But like the whole point is that it's hard to sit down and remember, oh yeah, I have to review X, Y, and Z today. So that's what this part can be automated. Like the spacing can be automated so that it goes by Ebbinghaus's curve. Like it'll remind you before you forget.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good tool to use. Like I guess I'll mention again in techniques, but like it does fall in line with spaced repetition. May as well just talk about it now.
Yeah, I think I've heard Ali Abdal or one of those guys mention the tool. I never looked at it actually, but I should look at it and we should link to it in show notes.
It's funny, I hated it in the past for some reason. Maybe I didn't like the whole aspect of it. Like just, I don't know why I didn't like it. But as soon as I realized how important it is to learning, like that spaced repetition actually works.
Yeah.
And it also taps into something called active recall is when you're forced to remember something. Like when you're forced to remember, that is when you're improving your memory and you're learning better.
Yeah. So
if you learned a fact yesterday and today you're trying to remember, what was it that I learned yesterday? That point in time is when you're flexing your muscle, and that point in time is when you're strengthening your neurons.
Yeah.
So like the active recall is very important. It's also another reason why active versus passive learning, like if you're just passively learning, not really trying to remember or engage with material, it's not going to stick.
Yeah.
But I think this is a bit different from active recall, where I was just going off the word active.
Yeah.
And the other thing that really helps is to have an endpoint. We talked about Pomodoro technique in a previous episode about productivity. But every time you have a study session, it's important to know for your brain when to walk away. For example, it'd be like, all right, I'm only going to put in 30 minutes. I'm going to walk away. And this makes it a lot easier for you just to approach this thing instead of like feeling dreading it all day. Like, oh, I have to study today. But if you just put in 30 minutes or 10 minutes, it's not so bad. Another thing that helps is like to have a roadmap, just so you could see where you are. And by roadmap, I mean like a table of contents in the book where you know that what chapter one is. And in chapter one, you cover A, B, C, D, and E, F, G. Always have that in front of you so you know which part you're on, how each part relates to the next part, and what the overall picture is. And I think also that it kind of helps a lot.
Yeah, I think that's good, because I think just to kind of draw a parallel, like when you have to sit for a presentation.
Yeah.
and let's say a presentation has 1 hour, and one is... They're the exact same, but one has a table of contents that's kind of popping out every 10 slides and kind of tells you where you are in the presentation versus the other one doesn't have anything. Then I think it's always good to have that part where it's kind of tracking your progress from, all right, we started here, this is where we're going, and this is the section we're at right now. So you already set for two sections and there's five more to go, or whatever the breakdown is. And it always feels good to know where you are rather than kind of being like, oh my God, how long do I still have to listen to this?
Right. I feel like this is a similar case with physical books versus digital books, Kindle. With a physical book, you can kind of gauge how far you're into the book just by the thickness of it. With a Kindle, even if you have the percentage in like in the lower right corner or something, that percentage is never right. And you just can't grasp how far you're in, how far you have to go, where you're at in terms of the knowledge of what you've covered. So I think that's, it kind of relates to that as well.
Yeah. Exactly. It's one of the things that I didn't like about Kindle, and one of the reasons I actually still prefer and only read them physical books is like, it feels good actually flipping every page and seeing those pages pile up on the left side as you at least in when you're reading in English, pile up on the left side as you're reading through and kind of getting towards the end and being able to check like, all right, this book has 400 pages, but the last 150 pages are clearly like notes and acknowledgements and stuff like that.
And that takes like 30%
yeah, exactly.
in a Kindle book.
So yeah, I can definitely see the roadmap point.
Yeah. I guess the last few things I quickly want to mention is that you absolutely need feedback for learning. There's also, and by feedback, I mean like it's easy to start learning by yourself, but you can't really make progress without course correction. And I guess we always kind of want feedback. I don't know how this part like sits under the science. Maybe I didn't pay attention too hard in the course. The other thing is chunking. Chunking is actually a very interesting one that I came across now. I guess this is also why I now heavily refer to outlines and table of contents and drawing my own mind maps, is that chunking is simply like a chunk of information is just a chunk, right?
Yeah.
But when you learn several chunks of information, you should start trying to connect them. This kind of helps you have a better understanding of how all these things are intertwined, work together, or at least connect them to something else that you already know, which kind of helps you understand them better. I guess this, that would be like, you would call that association. Like if you learned X, or I don't know, like topic X, and topic X really reminds you of topic Y. So you could be like, oh yeah, topic X reminds me of topic Y.
Yeah.
Because you already have an established piece of knowledge in your brain that's in your long-term memory, you can easily connect it to that new acquired piece of information. You kind of chunked it. You connected these two together, and I think you can remember them better. So chunking definitely works.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Because again, I think it gives things context, I guess, right? Because again, it's kind of difficult to remember things by themselves. And I think everything is part of a broader context. And like whatever you learn, I guess if you can find a place for it within the entire universe of what you know, then probably makes it easier to remember. Yeah.
Agree. All right. So, I quickly covered the science of it, I think. Then the course next talks about the four pillars of learning according to the course. And the four pillars are: one, it's all a game. So you should treat it as a game, as in like, you know, try to score higher. If you fail, it's okay. Get up and try. Keep going. Like, don't treat it as like life or death. Treat it as a game. The next one is the Feynman technique, which is based on Richard Feynman, famous physicist, late great physicist. And this technique is like, pretend you're going to teach whatever you're learning to a sixth grader. So you have to explain it in the simplest ways possible. And if you're having trouble explaining things, it means that you probably have gaps in your own knowledge. And it's forcing you to go look for like what exactly you're missing. And like rinse and repeat until you can explain everything in simple terms. Then there's trunk-based knowledge. And trunk-based knowledge refers to like a tree trunk. Like instead of looking for the leaves, or, like, you know, for example, someone might want to learn how to code. And maybe they want to like create a pop-up on a website. And that's all they kind of want the code for. Yeah. Or maybe they want to make the new sexy app. For the iPhone 12 or whichever one we're up on. But that's kind of like the details at that point. Yeah. What you first need to learn is like the fundamentals. And that's the trunk, like the tree trunk, the roots. So start with the roots, understand how programming works or how computers communicate first. And the reason why this is a pillar is because the leaves, the details change all the time. Like, I guess in terms of programming, there's going to be like a new language maybe in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. Yeah. So it's going to be something new. But the fundamental stuff, the tree trunk stuff, the roots, those don't change as much.
Yeah, I actually encounter this a lot when talking with different people. Is
how so?
Like, people like talking about details, right?
Yeah.
But oftentimes skip the kind of the core of the issue. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, so like to give a random example, like let's say you want to start a new blog, right? To kind of keep it relevant to this podcast, and like most people, what they want to talk about is, oh, should I have the logo be blue or green, or should I use this template or should I use that template, or should it be based on WordPress or should it be based on what's the other one? Squarespace.
Yeah.
Squarespace. Or Wix. Or Wix or whatever. WordPress, by the way. But anyways, people like to kind of dive into these details, right?
Yeah.
But actually, the first thing they need to solve is, again, just look at, all right, so what is the blog about? And what is the scope of the blog? How do I want to run it? Do I want to post once a week or do I want to post five times a week? Do I want to write all the content or do I want to outsource the content? And like, there are so many more basic questions or core questions that you have to answer before you kind of dive into these details. But in a way, these little details are what is more fun to discuss, right? And I feel like that's what happens a lot.
Yeah.
And I guess to kind of reflect this into learning is like, and I think I'm guilty of this, and I'm sure you're probably guilty of this, and everybody's guilty of this, but it's like much, much more fun to read, well, fun facts than it is to like pick up a textbook and actually learn the core of a thing, right?
Yeah, it's that you kind of want the instant gratification, so you want to learn some fun facts.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's finding a balance, because again, like, if you just read textbooks, then sure, maybe you get like a core knowledge, but you can't apply it. But then again, if you just read like a couple of tweets by somebody about something and lack the core knowledge, then that's not going to get you anywhere either.
Yeah. This makes me think of like A-B testing. And right now I'm reading a book called You Should Test That. And the reason why I'm reading is because like when I'm testing emails, it's very easy to go on an A-B testing spree and be like, all right, let me test the color of this button. Let me test this. Let me test that. Let me test this. Let me test that. Let me test this. And you're just like, you're running around like a headless chicken with no strategy, no methodology in place. Yeah. Whereas like that, and that's kind of what I realized that I was doing was like, you know, I'm kind of like going random here. I'm sure there's a better way. So what am I missing? Like, so how do you run A-B tests the proper way? How do you look for opportunities to fix rather than just like going off the top of your head, like, oh, I think I should try a different color?
Exactly. It's like essentially it's strategy versus tactics, right? It's like know your strategy before you work on your tactics, because otherwise like you say, you'll just run around like a headless chicken trying a thing here, trying a thing there.
Exactly. And you, as a headless chicken, you don't really make much progress. All right, and the third pillar is efficiency trumps grit. So I guess this kind of points back to like, you shouldn't be putting like 4 or 10 hours a day of studying, but you space it out and you focus on the right things.
So work smart, not hard.
Yeah. So these are the four pillars of learning. So everything is a game, Feynman technique, trunk-based knowledge, and efficiency trumps grit. So now that we covered that, I guess we can jump into the techniques of the actual learning.
Sure. So I think you have, you listed 14 or 15 of them. Maybe we can pick a few that we think are good and that we like. Is there any that you found the most, the most useful or the most interesting out of the ones that the course talked about?
Well, I think the most interesting ones are definitely having a roadmap. Again, and right now as we're talking, I'm looking at the outline that I wrote, and I'm looking at the outline of the course, and just like having a roadmap in front of you of where you are and where you have to go and what you have to study. Like it makes a lot of sense, because it puts the sense into your brain. You know, let's say if you're learning a language and you don't have a roadmap, you're like, all right, I kind of want to learn the language, but where should I start? But if you have a roadmap saying, all right, first step is learn the top 100 words. Next step is learn the top 10, grammar patterns, sentence patterns. While this may not be the perfect roadmap that guarantees you fluency, it's much better than, again, running around like a headless chicken. So you absolutely need a roadmap, aka a plan or an outline of whatever it is that you're learning. And if you're learning from like a resource already, find the table of contents for it. Find the curriculum for it, where it's all laid out. So you know where you are, what is in there, what you're missing, and how much more you need to go.
Yeah, that's a really good one, I think, because again, like you said, unless you have some sort of plan, some sort of roadmap, then you don't know where to start. And I think even more importantly, you don't know where to go next, because it's always easy to start from whatever. I'm going to learn a new word today, and you open the dictionary and you pick a random word. But I think it's about where do I go next, and also what is the kind of outcome, right? Because let's say you want to get from like JLPT, from no Japanese to like JLPT, what is it, 4 or something, the easiest one?
Yeah, or 5, I think they have now.
Or 5 or whatever. And that kind of gives you a clear starting point, which is right now, knowing nothing, and a clear ending point, which is passing this test. And again, as much as we hate standardized tests, I think there's a lot of merit to them in terms of they give you something to aim for, right?
Mm. I think tests are important. Like that, they give you something to aim for. I was thinking about this earlier today. If people didn't hate tests so much, like, here's the thing: in order to learn something, right, you know that it requires a lot of repetition and practice, right?
Yeah.
So knowing that, if you're studying for a test that's like repetition already or practice, and the test itself is also more practice, so if anything, it makes you even better. Like, if you can toss aside the fact that you're going to pass or fail the thing, the simple exercise in doing that stuff is going to make you smarter. Like preparing for the test, taking the test, all of this stuff actually makes you smarter. So
yeah, that's actually interesting that you bring it up, because I was watching something on TV the other day, and there was this guy that was saying like every time he brought home a test where he got 100%, he got scalded. and it's kind of counterintuitive, right? Because like you want to get 100% on a test, but it kind of ties into the roadmap, actually, because he was saying that his dad or his mom or whatever It's like, if you bring a 100-point test home, then it means you don't know what the next step is. But if you bring like a 97-point or like a 75-point test back home, then you kind of have a clear idea of, all right, these are the areas that I'm still not good enough at. So I should study those. So essentially not getting 100 on a test creates the roadmap for you for the next steps in a way.
Identifies the gaps in your knowledge. Yeah, and that's kind of what you want.
Yeah, exactly. Which I thought was pretty interesting. It's like flip around the way that you think about tests and rather than thinking about them as kind of testing your knowledge and just being like a thing that you want to avoid, just think of it as something that will guide you towards what your next step should be.
Exactly. And it's funny because I'm looking at the outline that I wrote up now, and there are some like things that I'm not fully sure of myself. And again, like, it's important to identify, and these are my gaps, and it's important to identify where your gaps are. So if you check Notion right now, you could see in part 3.
Yeah.
I have some question marks. But so there's that. I definitely have to mention again, spaced repetition learning, because spaced repetition system, like flashcards, like the Anki flashcard system, uses two elements that you absolutely need. One is active recall, and two is spaced learning. Again, you want spaced learning because you don't learn anything in one day. You learn it over a space period of time. Yeah. And Anki automates that for you. As long as you use it every day, it'll do the rest for you. And then also because it tests you on stuff, right? You have to remember, like, do I know this word? What does this word mean? Or what does this sentence mean? Or what does this physics concept mean?
Yeah.
If you remember it and you can say it out loud, and then you flip the card and you get the answer, if you got it right, then you're essentially testing yourself. So that's a highly recommended app and learning technique, spaced repetition learning. Next up is deliberate practice. And deliberate practice is, I talked about it before. I think I came across it in Robert Greene's book on mastery, where he talked about a basketball player who would dribble balls down a cruise ship, where, you know, like, the floor isn't exactly level because it's like the ship is bobbing up and down with the waves. But deliberate practice is like practicing at your limit, meaning find where you're weak or where your limit is, where you're uncomfortable, and practice there. So come up with really specific practices. So like, I can easily think about, you know, for example, Japanese grammar, the causative and causative passive, the saserareru, saseru, and then saserareru, are like the biggest pains in the A in my opinion. I'm pretty sure there's more stuff that gives me headaches, but I specifically know that I hate these things, and I'm not very natural with them.
Yeah.
So these things I would go for and, like, I don't know, just drill the hell out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like those, I'm sure you heard about them, but I don't remember who it is or who it was, but there was this basketball guy that wouldn't leave the gym until he hit, like, I think 100 free shots straight in a row or something like that. And again, I guess it's just coming up with ways to master your craft and to learn and just practice.
Yeah. But in the case of deliberate practices, it's specifically focusing on something that it's at the edge of your comfort. So it's maybe for someone, it's easy to shoot free throws. Maybe for him, it wasn't. But if it's easy for you to shoot free throws, then you should probably do something that makes it a bit more harder. Like, I don't know, put like weights, wear a weighted vest or something, or find something, or like have someone block you, like add an extra element that makes it harder.
Or not go home until you hit 100 in a row. I think that's pretty hard.
Yeah, that's true. And there's also, this kind of also plays into another learning technique, which is called interleaving, meaning mix it up. So I read an example about this in the case of baseball, whereas, you know, someone's practicing hitting certain kind of pitches. Like, if someone's throwing you like a certain kind of pitch, like only one kind of pitch, and that's all you practice on, that's all you're going to get better at. But if the pitcher is varying up their throws and you're practicing on all of them, you're kind of like interleaving, you're mixing up skills. So while this guy might be practicing 100 free throws, maybe he should also vary it up on some kind of levels. On the language aspect of it, it's like, if you learn a word, then it makes sense to say it out loud, write it out 10 times. I try to attack it from all kinds of angles, is interleaving.
I think that sounds right. I mean, just adding some variety, and I guess this is also part of just it stops being a pure memorization if you add a bit of, I guess, variance to the way you learn things. Because I think, again, to take it back to the regular school system example, is like, there's a very clear thing of, all right, you got to learn this. And then on the test, you got to repeat these things system for a lot of subjects. Again, I think stuff like math is different and stuff like writing essays and things like that, that kind of get your creative or thinking juices flowing. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, I don't know how it works in the US, but at least in my high school and in Slovakia in general, it's like history class or chemistry class or physics mm-hmm. is more than about understanding the concepts. It's just about memorizing the concepts essentially and being able to repeat them.
I feel like a lot of schools follow this kind of pathway. And if it's, and maybe I feel like it's also students doing this simply just so they could pass the test.
Yeah.
But I think most countries across the world probably take memorization over actually understanding the subject.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I guess it kind of goes back to the way that we test people, right? Because there's good tests and there's bad tests, I guess.
Because in that case, it's everyone's approaching testing from, I really got to pass this test or else my life is over, you know? So for them, it's just like a win or lose type of situation. They're not seeing test as a learning opportunity or an opportunity to grow. It's a win or lose situation. Because if you, for example, if you fail a test on getting into a good college, or if you fail the SATs, that's your chance, you know, getting into a good college and then getting a good job. So I think for most people, and also this is also fueled by parents too, is they treat test taking and tests as a win or lose situation that you absolutely must win at all costs, which is like not the way to approach learning, because learning is not exactly win or lose, because obviously you're not exactly going to remember everything from day one. It's a process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I guess it really depends on the motivation behind the test.
Yeah. A few more things that I want to point out is community as a technique. Like, you should always have a community. And this one kind of resonates with me quite strongly, because there's things that I've learned on my own, or have tried to learn on my own and haven't had much success. And then there's things that I've picked up with a community of people. For example, in the case of language learning, I've been dumb enough to do it on my own. But say doing improv classes, I've done that for like several years and I saw growth in it.
Yeah.
And I'm starting, this is like, you know, we all want to be that lone wolf, intelligent guy that did it all but on his own.
Yeah.
Because we think it appeals to the ego and it's going to impress someone else that you self-taught yourself a language. I'm sure some people exist like that. But for the greater majority of us, I think you're much better off with a community of people, because that also exposes you to feedback. In other words, knowing what you're doing right and wrong. It exposes you to it's a lot of elements that facilitate better learning. You know, you're much more active. You get feedback. Your motivation is high. There's always an endpoint. There's goals. There's systems in place for you if you go to an actual place rather than learning on your own. A lot of this stuff is kind of built in already.
Yeah.
So I think this is something I kind of want to apply a little more. And I think this kind of requires dropping the ego.
Yeah.
And also system versus goals. I think this is something that we talked about quite often. Goals is definitely like a important thing to have. Like, the course talks about setting specific goals. But at the same time, if you have a hard time hitting goals, then you should focus on just having a system, which is just put in 30 minutes today and that's it. Put in 30 minutes today every day, and you'll do much better than just like trying to like have a goal of, let's say, lose weight versus doing 30 minutes of exercise every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think there's, again, as we talked a couple of times on this podcast, I think there's kind of input goals and output goals. And like, I guess in this, the way you speak about it, I guess the system is the input goals and the goal itself is the output goal. But let's say you want to pass the JLPT 5, that's kind of the output goal. And then what's the input goal? So maybe you got to spend 30 minutes a day learning Japanese.
Yeah.
And it's like the input goal, you should feel bad about not hitting, I think, if you said something. It's like, you say you're going to do something, you should aim to try to hit it. Again, you don't have to feel bad necessarily, but you also should kind of keep yourself accountable. But I think the output goal is like get the JLPT. I think there's some other factors at play too that you can control. So it's like, if you studied 30 minutes a day up until the test and then still failed, then definitely look back and learn, but also don't feel bad about it. Like, sometimes things don't work out the way you plan for them to. And like, as long as you put in the work you plan to do and that you believed would be enough to get you there, then just look back, reflect on whether it went well or not, and and kind of readjust the input goal based on that.
Yeah, or readjust your expectations.
Or that, yeah. I mean, somewhere the input goal and the output goal have to meet somewhere, right?
Yeah.
It can be like, I'm going to study 30 minutes a day and the output is going to be, I'm going to be the next time.
They should be connected, I think. Like I think of it as like long-term versus short-term goals, and my short-term goals feed into my long-term goals, but I think it's a similar situation here.
Yeah.
I think it's good to have both, because you always want something that you can control. I think if you feel that you're in control, I think you're much more better off. Because like, if you feel like you're not in control in the case of your learning,
yeah,
then you're going to give up, because it's like you start feeling like the headless chicken. No one wants to feel like a headless chicken.
Yeah. Right.
And I'll give you one last one if you're interested.
Yeah.
It's called the Loki method. It's a memory palace. It's probably a popular one. I already should have learned about this before, but I've never actually practiced it. But I think it's quite effective in terms of memorization.
How does it work? Is it an acronym or is it an... A word? Or?
No. It's a Loki is like refers to the I think Latin word for locus or place, location.
Oh, I see.
So essentially, you have to think of a route that you walk down, or think of a place, like say your apartment, and then let's say you want to memorize 5 pieces of information. Like for example, the easy thing to do is to go with playing cards, right? Let's say you want to memorize 5 random cards that you just pulled out of your deck.
Yeah.
And so what you would do is imagine yourself going through your apartment, right? The place that you must know well. You'd be like, all right, in my bed, you know, I see a 7 shovels, and 7 shovels is your first card. It's the 7 of spades. So you create some imagery around it. And then like, as you get out of bed and you, I don't know what your apartment is like, but as you get out of bed and you open the door, there's a bleeding heart on the floor and it's the 1 of hearts, right?
Yeah.
So essentially you come up with some imagery like that. You create a story like that as you're walking through this place that you know very well in your head. Like it could be on the way to the store, on the way to the train station, or the walk between your apartment and the place where you usually get lunch.
Yeah.
Because you know these things so well, you can stick these pieces of information and remember them better.
That's interesting. It's almost like, what do you call this, mnemonics?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like a kind of a memory aid or memory guide.
It was interesting because, another part that the course talked about was the power of senses, and then how we learn better when senses are engaged.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of the time, you know, our senses are not engaged. Like if it requires our survival, or there's danger, there's clear and present danger in front of us, or if there's a threat, I think we will learn much faster. But for the most part, you know, we're no longer living in huts.
Yeah.
Out in the grass fields with wolves and bisons and whatnot. So there's a bit less of senses going on. But the whole point I'm trying to make here is like, we also learn a lot through stories, and stories kind of like activate our senses.
Yeah.
And what you're doing with the Loki method is like, aside from tapping into what's something that you already know, you're also kind of tapping into the senses. You're coming up with a story. I'm trying to remember why else the Loki method was very popular. I think like because the human brain is not only wired for stories, but it's also wired for like location.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I have to Google this.
Yeah, that sounds right. Because I think like memories are kind of tied to places if you think about it, right? It's like if you go to some place where you have some memory, then as soon as you get to that place, you kind of remember that one memory from that place. So I guess if you can somehow tie things that are not necessarily location specific, but if you can tie them to a location, then I guess that could help.
Yeah. I have the Wikipedia open. I want to see if there's any association. Damn it, I can't find it. Can't find it. All right, never mind. I feel like the course did talk about something about what the human brain is hardwired for in terms of like navigation, location, but I can't remember it off the top. But I think that's another powerful point, is like look for what we're hardwired to do. Look for what we're hardwired to do.
Yeah.
And find a way to align your learning with that, because then it becomes easier. And
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess all of this that we're talking about today are pretty much about using the way that the human brain works and that we know it works to your advantage rather than to your disadvantage.
Yeah,
pretty much.
So instead of reading and rereading and rewriting things out and highlighting, there's much smarter approaches to learning, and there are better uses of your time as well.
Yeah. Although I guess again, like when I read books, I highlight things, and I don't think it's because I think if I highlight, I'll remember more. I think it's more about just kind of knowing where to come back and what I found interesting. And I guess the fact that you highlight something also means that you are going to go back and repeat and focus on those parts that you highlighted. So it's almost like a roadmap that forces you to go back and repeat. So I think, I know there's been some studies, I guess, about highlighting and how it doesn't help with learning. Hmm. But I think beyond just that, I think just the fact that it gives you a reason to go back and repeat it.
You know what I think really helps with learning, and this goes back to active recall, is, and Ali Abdallah has also done videos on, is simply asking yourself questions like, what did I learn in this episode or something like that? Or what does X mean? And how is X related to Y? And then go and try and find the answers out for yourself, and you develop a better understanding of it.
Yeah.
So like asking yourself questions is an underrated way to learn.
Yeah, I think so. I think being able to quote unquote chat with yourself and ask yourself things is definitely good.
Yeah. All right. And anything else that you want to cover? Because there's plenty more that we could talk about.
I see that you have Pareto principle here and Parkinson's law. I think those are concepts that are kind of in general useful, even beyond learning. So maybe you want to cover those.
Yeah. Well, Pareto principle is what you, it's the 80-20 rule, right? 20% of the X gives you 80% results, or the opposite.
Yeah.
You could do 80% and get 20% results. So in the case of learning, this also ties back to trunk-based knowledge. Pareto principle here tells you, or forces you to ask, what is important and what is crucial for me to learn, and what do I need to skip? So of course, you have to learn the fundamentals. And that kind of guides you to the fundamentals and away from like things like random things, or like, again, going back to like programming. Instead of learning how to build an app, you should first learn how to program, understand how computers work. I'm sure you could learn to build an app, but then once apps are out and you don't have a fundamental understanding of like programming, you'll be, you know, left out in the cold or something.
Yeah.
So Pareto principle goes into that. You identify the most important things that you have to learn, the fundamentals, and then you focus on that as the best return for your time.
Yeah. And how about Parkinson's law?
Parkinson's law is like the law that says that work expands to the time allotted.
Yeah.
So like if you give yourself a week to learn 5 words, then you will learn 5 words in a week. Or if you give yourself like a 10-minute deadline to memorize 5 words, you'll memorize them. So basically, from the learning perspective, they suggest that you be creative with the time that you allot.
Yeah.
So like, I have to double check and come back to this as well. I don't quite remember what the exact connection was, but obviously you can spend a lot of time on something that doesn't need a lot of time spending on.
Yeah.
So I think like from the learning perspective, maybe like, again, apply the Pomodoro principle and study for 25 minutes instead of I'm gonna learn this for an hour, which is probably not the best use of your time.
Yeah.
In business, I know it means a different thing. Like it means that someone's wasting their time.
Yeah, it means that if you set a meeting to be 1 hour, then even if there's nothing to talk about, it will be 1 hour.
Yeah.
Or if you assign something to your staff and you tell them they've got 1 hour, then even if it's something that could be done in 5 minutes, they will spend 1 hour on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, wasting time, like you said.
Yeah, it's wasting time. What are you learning right now that you think you could apply this stuff to?
That's a good question. I guess, it's a good question because I'm not learning anything that's like factual. Like I guess I'm trying to create the YouTube videos, but where I guess you could say you can apply the Parkinson's law is like if I say that I've got forever to make the next video, then it's going to take forever. If I set a deadline and say I'm going to publish one a week, then I have 1 week to make a video. And to flip it on the other side, it's like probably most of the recording and editing and stuff like that. In 20% of the time, I get the basics done, and then the rest of the time is like fine tuning. So it's like finding the balance there. I guess my part of my argument though would be like, once you can actually identify these, I don't think they're as effective or as efficient as when you kind of unconsciously practice these when you work on things. Like for example, like the spaced repetition, for example, right? It's like coming back to the same concepts and repeating them.
Yeah.
Like let's say you're starting to work at a company or with a client.
Yeah.
And like that sort of naturally happens, right? Like you talk with a client, you learn something, you take it back, you work on something, then you talk again and you revisit the same concepts.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what experience is, right? It's like doing the same thing over and over and over again,
yeah,
and getting better and better and better at it. So I guess even though I can't like pinpoint specific places where I'm using these, I think a lot of these things I'm kind of naturally applying to different parts of my life or business. I don't know.
Yeah, I think like in a case of school or work, like that is the case, because you literally have a system in place where you repeat that information, or you're constantly engaged with it, or so you learn it better.
Yeah.
But it's like when you're on your own, it's a bit harder. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Again, yeah, I think that's a good point. And again, I guess when you're on your own, it comes back to, I think like you were saying, finding community, whether that's actual people that you talk to live, like we were talking right now, and like we're talking our goals episodes and so on,
yeah,
or whether it's like somebody you follow on YouTube, or whether it's a course you're taking and you're serious about. I think those all can kind of act as community, and then having some system and goals in place and just sticking to those.
Right. Here's the next question. What did you find interesting in this episode? What stood out to you most?
I guess one thing is the forgetting curve. Is it what it was called? I already forgot.
Yeah, the forgetting curve.
Demonstrated right here. I think it's something that we kind of unconsciously know, but I think it's one of those things that's good to actually understand consciously.
Yeah.
And kind of explicitly. The other thing, I think the Feynman technique, where like you should be able to explain the thing. Again, I never thought of it as a Feynman technique, but I think when we were also talking about 1 year of podcasting last time, we kind of touched upon that, where it's like the fact that you have to explain something makes it necessary for you to understand the thing at a deeper level than just kind of thinking I understand it or thinking I know it.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely great. I think those were the two things that, again, I don't know if interesting is the right word, but I think those are things that are good to be kind of reminded of explicitly. And then I think the Lockeye method or whatever the pronunciation is.
Yeah.
I think that's a good one too. And that's an interesting one, because again, I think it kind of highlights the connection between your memory and the way you think and the location you're in.
Yeah.
And I think that's not something that I usually think about. It's like wherever I am, I just do what has got to be done.
Yeah.
But maybe it's good to be a bit more conscious about that. And the last thing to highlight, I think, is the focus versus diffuse modes. Because again, I think when you're, and I think this applies to both work as well as learning and to pretty much anything in life. It's like there's times when it's time to try really hard and focus and hustle. Mm-hmm. But there's also times when the best thing to do is kind of coast and slow down and absorb things and process things.
Yeah.
Rather than just trying to essentially very actively do something. Just take it slow and give it time. So I think that's an important thing.
Yeah. For me, I think... it's very interesting to learn about short-term to long-term memory. It's like, I mean, going back to forgetting, we all kind of know that we forget, but simply understanding that, simply taking it as a given that whatever you learn right now, you're going to forget it. So therefore, you have not learned it, and that you still have to like repeat that information to drill it into your long-term memory is part of the learning process. So it's like, if you're not doing that, if you come across something, if you read something for the first time, it's not going to be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you have to have a plan for how to revisit it again. To me, that's very interesting, because again, it takes away the pressure of trying to put in like a lot of work up front, and it spaces that pressure out over like several, you know, days or months or however long it would take.
Yeah.
It's also interesting for me to have like a roadmap. I never thought about it before, but because you need like an overall overview of where you're at and where else you have to go while you're focused on the details. Cause it's very easy to get stuck in the details and then suddenly start getting stressed out. Like, am I learning anything? Where am I going with this? But if you know that you're like halfway through and you learned that you learned X, Y, and Z and you still have to go D, E, F, then it's a bit more comfortable for the brain.
Yeah.
It's also good to have like an end point, like just say, all right, after this 25-minute session, I'm done and I'm walking away. That's like that. I think it's just makes it easier. A lot of things are like chunking. I find fascinating, just connecting stuff together. A lot of this stuff is pretty, very fascinating. But I guess for me, the most important things are just to remember the givens. One, you're going to forget it. You can forget it all tomorrow. Two, spaced repetition works. Three, if you hear it once, you're not learning it. New info is a connection, is a neural connection, but the repetition is what strengthens the connection. If you forget, the connection is weak. So again, take these things as given, at least how I'm going to try to go about this.
Yeah.
And then come back and practice it as much as possible.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
No, I think it was really interesting to reflect on these things, because again, as as I was mentioning, it's not like I don't apply some of these things. Like they definitely unconsciously happen, but kind of talking about them and actually putting into words was already happening. I think that that's always good. Plus, there's some new stuff as well, which is great. So, I think we'll have to do an episode where we kind of come back to this and see if we applied any of this.
Sorry, my chair is squeaking. Yeah, because I guess I'm saying this for myself. I don't want to feel achievement that I've gone through this course and I think I learned something, because this is not an achievement. What this is a tool to learn other things, to get better at other things. And if I'm not using that, then I'm a dummy. So let me frame it this way.
Yeah, exactly. And again, just as with all these things, that the most difficult part is actually taking this and implementing it consistently to get any results out of it.
Exactly. So that's where the Anki spaced repetition app comes in. All right. This has been the Side Hustles and Stuff podcast. If you want to check out Learning to Learn, Zero to Mastery is the Udemy course that I'm taking. It's called Learning to Learn, Efficient Learning, Zero to Mastery. We'll have a link in the show notes at sidehustlesandstuff.com/E49.
Great.
Yeah. And yeah.
This has been the
Side Hustles and Stuff podcast, episode 49, with Kei Shin Yeri.
Talk to you next week.
I've grown accustomed to sparkling water again.
I wonder if the book, hold on, let me try to figure out some example here without...
Shoot three free throws again.
I started like right when we hopped on the call.
Oh, really? Oh that's sneaky. Anyway, all right.
I thought that was the agreement.
It is the agreement. That means that we'll have to do the intro at the end of this, okay?
All right.